The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's good Thursday. Thanks for being with us. We will have Kalen Jones from The Ringer and Eric Metz, the NFL agent, some business and sports stuff with Mr. Metz on today's show. I've been on a Zoom with the U of A. They're introducing their football staff later this morning. I'll be on a Zoom with their head coach, Jeb Fish. It is a very interesting time in our state. I know that the Arizona State Sun Devil fans are just rollicking over what happened a couple months ago, but it happened a couple months ago. So there's a whole new staff that's in place. They've already brought back three local kids, Gunnar Maldonado, Drake Anderson were two of the three, and why am I blanking on the other one? It happens. It'll hit me while I'm sitting here doing the open. But they are bringing the and Jason Harris. So the idea that they're going to go local, and there's some other local high school, big name high school kids that are considering going to U of A. It's just a fact. So it's really interesting right now. And for us, of course, doing college football as much as we do in college sports and high school, it's a big day for us just to sit in and get content and visit and get to know these people. You will see them on the stream at some point in time and on the television show that we have over on Fox Sports Arizona. We appreciate the partnership with them. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. It's Desert Financial Credit Union. They are around the valley and around the state before you know it. Okay, Desert Financial Credit Union, the title sponsor and proud title sponsor of Sports360AZ.com. We appreciate Jeff Mishi and their support. I had a bug the other day, and I thought that I had COVID. I appreciate Jordan filling in on Monday and Tuesday. You guys ever been in that space where you just start feeling ick? And I full disclosure, saw not one play of the Browns-Steelers game because I was asleep, like dead asleep, because I thought I was dead. This bug hit me on Sunday afternoon so hard. And then you start going through your mind, man, did I pick up COVID? And I went and took a COVID test, took a rapid test, came back negative. And I have people say, well, yeah, but then they call you a couple days later and say, well, maybe not. So it's been more than a couple of days, but I started feeling like I turned the corner on Tuesday. And so again, appreciate Jordan Hamm jumping in and taking care of business and doing what he does so well. I want to start with James Harden today. So yes, I remember James Harden walking in, it was like 2007, 2008, to an Arizona State basketball game. I didn't know who the kid was. He was in jean shorts and a t-shirt, had a backpack on, put his backpack over to the side, just started shooting jumpers. It was like 2 hours before a game. And I say to Doug Tamaro, who's been the sports information director at ASU for a long, long time, who's that? He said, oh, it's James Harden. He's one of the top players in the country. We're trying to get him. We'll see. He's tight with Derek Glasser. That's going to help us. So on and so forth. So James came and he went. It's kind of like Josh Christopher. Josh Christopher is not going to be here next year, from what I can tell and see. When you're a one-and-done guy, or back then, you get a couple of years, you're lucky, you're fortunate. So James came in, and he went on to the NBA. And, of course, he's had a tremendous run in the NBA. He's had a tremendous run off the court as well. But for whatever reason with James Harden, it's very fair to point out, he can't stay with one team, okay? And because we are in this day and age where players can force their way out, you're the Houston Rockets, and whether or not things went right or wrong in Houston, James said, I think they're wrong. It's not going to be able to be fixed. The Rockets went out and got John Wall from Washington. I've never been the biggest John Wall guy, but I thought John Wall was great yesterday. It was the night before, where he was asked directly about what's going on with James Harden. He says, obviously, this isn't going well. Obviously, there's tension here. Like, okay, we actually have honesty and truth rather than, oh, everything's great. Well, no, it's not. So James Harden wants to get with Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant wants to win a title with Brooklyn. Kyrie Irving disappears because stuff's going on behind the scenes. I don't know what's there. I just know for Steve Nash and Sean Marks, that's a tough deal. And Amari, you know, Amari's there too on their staff. When Kyrie Irving, a couple weeks into the season, is like, yeah, I'm going to take some time. I got things I got to handle. I got things I got to deal with. And we don't know what they are. but it always feels like there's something around Kyrie Irving. It just does. I don't know what the reason is for that, and I know he's a massive star and all that stuff, but I just want people that are there that can go win titles and be the guy to help win the title. So as we're going through all this, I look at and look up and say, well, James Harden, are you going to stick? Are you not going to stick? You know, what's it going to be? Are you going to be able to go win a title or not win a title? And so it's one of those, I'm in a wait and see mode on James Harden, to be quite honest with you. The stuff off the court, I know that's great. I know he's done great in his personal branding. I have nothing personal with James. It's just, what are we doing here exactly? Where is it going exactly with James Harden trying to win a title? So I think it's very fair to keep an eye on that. I feel very bad for Bobby Hurley. I feel very bad for Monty Williams. I feel bad for fans because fans don't know. When the Suns lost 2 of 3 on this recent road trip, and Monty, after they lost to Washington, and he was talking in a tone of, to me, it sounded like there was stuff going on behind the scenes, and then they canceled because of COVID, and it's like, okay, we got it. So things are starting to creep in and be around the team. They've not said that. I can only assume. I know what happens when you assume, but I can only assume that when you shut down and not play against the Hawks last night or Golden State tomorrow, that there's more that's going on with COVID than what we can see or even be told at this point. So it's frustrating for the fans. I'm excited for the Coyotes, though. The Coyotes do play tonight. Having hockey on the ice, and, you know, it was a rough first year for Alex Morello. There is no other way to put it. Alex Morello stepped in it more than a few times. Rick Tocchet is still here. General manager has been changed. Shane Doan has been brought back. That's always interesting to me when they bring back the former star player. It's great for Shane. Shane's been working in the league office. I don't think Shane would take this position if there was any hint that this owner's not committed to keeping the team here and getting the team out of Glendale, which has always been the discussion. On the ice, I don't know if they're going to be any good or not. I don't. I would think they're going to be pretty good because they have all the pieces that you need. You have a keeper. You have two keepers, actually. You have young emerging star talent. You're not having to get fans to come out to watch you, so it's important that the TV product looks good. It's a really interesting time from a business end for the Coyotes in this market. They are always there, and people will say, what's going on with them? Are they going to be able to figure this out or not? And that's been the story around them. So there's that. The NFL playoffs this weekend, we have Kalen Jones here in a couple minutes. So for Kalen, it is my questioning to him is going to be along the lines of the most interesting game, and Kalen covers the NFL for The Ringer and Bill Simmons and does a really good job. The most interesting game this weekend, to me, the game with the biggest potential for a blowout is probably the Browns-Chiefs, right? We think that. But I would guess last weekend, if we were to say which game is going to be a blowout the opposite way, it would be Browns-Steelers. The Steelers would blow them out, and they didn't. Packers-Rams, merely because it's supposed to be cold and not great conditions. You have the young quarterbacks that you look at in the Ravens and Buffalo game. How do you not get excited about Josh Allen against Lamar Jackson? And then you have the Greybeards in Breeze and Brady and the Bucks and Saints. So every one of those games has a storyline to them that's terrific. And we'll talk with Kalen about that and also what happened with the Cardinals in this offseason. Then a little bit later, we'll go down the line to talk with Eric Metz on things around the business side of sports. That is all straight ahead, but up next, it's Kalen Jones around the NFL with The Ringer. Stay with us. All right, let's turn our attention now to the NFL, and Kalen Jones is with us. Kalen, of course, doing a great job with The Ringer, covers the National Football League, a former Sun Devil, and actually part of Sports 360 at one point in time, a long, long time ago, but he is on the national stage now, and he's doing really well. All right, so I want to get into first your view, what you hear around the league before we get to the games, on what happened here in Arizona this season. How was that received? What was your view on what happened over here and why this team isn't playing now?
Well, I don't have much insider information as far as like how it was received. For me personally, I thought it was interesting because, you know, there was so much potential, you know, going into this year for the Cardinals. And I think, you know, I think there, you know, a few analysts and pundits have talked about how Kyler Murray in particular could take that, you know, second year jump because of what, you know, Cliff Kingsbury and the crew had done towards the end of the 2019 season. And I think we saw signs of it. I think that they did a really good job, especially in acquiring, you know, DeAndre Hopkins, deciding, you know, trying to invest and surround Kyler Murray with at least a number one option. The problem, I think, is that, you know, they started off so well, and I think that the expectations got so high that I think Cliff Kingsbury and, you know, the Cardinals didn't really live up to what was really expected of them because of, you know, the expectations being raised by account of how well they played early on in the year. And I think some of it, and a lot, actually not just some of it, a lot of it has to do with what, you know, what Cliff Kingsbury was doing, you know, schematically. You know, he didn't really move DeAndre Hopkins a lot, kept him, you know, tucked on the left side of the formations a lot, didn't really rely on Kyler Murray's legs. But I mean, at the same time, the personnel isn't all that great. Their off the line could be improved a little bit. Again, the receiving corps outside of Hopkins, I mean, an aging Larry Fitzgerald, Dan Arnold, and Christian Kirk isn't the most lethal, you know, receiving group to have. And Kyler Murray himself is still adjusting to the NFL as a passer. So there's a lot of factors at play. I do think that the Cardinals still have potential to keep competing in the NFC West moving forward, especially with, you know, Murray behind center. But I think that, you know, there's definitely room for growth, you know, with Cliff Kingsbury, especially considering the way that they finished the year.
Yeah, I mean, competing is one thing, as you use the term competing. Winning and playing in January is another. It just feels like, you know, they're a long ways away in this division. All right, let's run through the games here. Kalen Jones with The Ringer. Make sure you follow him on all social media channels. He does a terrific job around the NFL. Most interesting of the four games to you this weekend?
I think it's got to be Buffalo and Baltimore. I mean, you have two of the young star quarterbacks in Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen facing off. And for both guys, you know, going into this year, especially this postseason, you know, Jackson, you know, had been 0-2 in the playoffs previously. There was the narrative that he wasn't good in the postseason and he hadn't really played that well in big matchups until he showed up last week against Tennessee and really, you know, helped lead a rally that, you know, was pretty rare for Baltimore to pull off. So I think the Ravens definitely have, you know, had to finish that off. And John Harbaugh mentioned after the game how meaningful it was for the team and that franchise moving forward as far as laying a foundation and kind of reaching the potential that we saw them kind of reach during the regular season but fall short of last year. And then Josh Allen himself, I think, again, a massively talented quarterback, should, you know, finish second or third in the MVP race this year. And then you look at the Buffalo Bills receiving corps, I think, you know, they've done a phenomenal job in terms of building out a roster and then surrounding Josh Allen with talent. And then also their coaching staff, Brian Daboll and co. Like, they've done a really phenomenal job there. And I'm really curious to see how that matchup goes up against Baltimore's really talented defense.
Okay, but let me stop. I'm going to stop you for a minute. How is it you can go with that game and these Browns fans are sitting out there saying, hey, man, Kalen Jones, what about us? We haven't been around since 2002. What about the Packers saying, what about our offense against the Rams that are number one? How about Aaron Donald? How about having Tom Brady on the field opposite Drew Brees? You're going to go with Ravens Bills. I'm not disagreeing with you. It's just there's so many good stories this weekend, Kalen.
No, there absolutely are. I think, and football, you know, is more watchable when the quarterbacks are really, really good. And that's not to say, you know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees are, you know, Tom Brady and Drew Brees. But at the same time, you know, I think Brees' play has declined. I think last week against, you know, Chicago, he didn't look all that great. I know that they won comfortably because it was the Bears. But I'm curious to see how he performs against, you know, Tampa Bay's defense. We'll see whether or not, again, Tom Brady has been playing at a really, really high level. So if you want to see great quarterback play, I'm sure that you'll watch that game when they go up against New Orleans defense for a third time. I think that's probably the second most interesting game, especially when you talk about narrative and storyline. As far as the Browns game, like you were just mentioning, you know, I think they have a surprisingly better chance than people are giving them because I'm someone who's been driving, you know, the Chiefs are inevitable train, like they're going to win Super Bowl. I've been driving that train all season, but at the same time, you know, I know momentum isn't real to some people, but at the same time, you know, this is a Browns team that loves being an underdog. I think Sammy Watkins from Kansas City tweeted something about them not being, you know, as good as they are. And Baker Mayfield and that's a team that loves, you know, being an underdog. And I think they're going to compete. They're going to make it interesting, at least early on, especially with Kevin Stefanski back there.
Okay, of the four games, which one has the greatest chance of being a blowout? I'm going for a hike at halftime. This game's over.
It might be that Cleveland-Kansas City game because their defense isn't all that good. They get Denzel Ward, Kevin Johnson back. But again, Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce, they're able to flip a switch that no other team in the NFL is able to hit. And even when they're trailing in a blink of an eye, like we saw against Miami earlier this season, they can come back at any point.
Yeah, but I'll just to be fair with you, I had my hike scheduled with the Browns and Steelers last week in the first quarter, and I was wrong. So,
you were right. Just the other team.
Just the other team. Right. So we haven't talked. We're talking with Kalen Jones at The Ringer. Make sure you follow all of his content. Does a great job nationally for that platform. And Bill Simmons, Packers, Rams. We haven't talked about that. If Aaron Donald doesn't play, it's one guy, but he's one big dude, an important dude. Rams not have a shot in this one. Is it Goff's beat up? Aaron Donald's beat up. Packers are going to roll. Let's get into that one.
I think. Yeah, it should be the Packers should roll. Like, they have the number one offense in terms of advanced metrics that, you know, mark efficiency ratings. The Rams defense is number four, though, in the same type of metric. So I'm curious to see how that matchup goes. And like you mentioned, you know, Aaron Donald, whether or not he plays is massive. I think their backup defensive tackle, Morgan Fox, who had a career year this year, six sacks this year. I mean, he's a pretty solid replacement. But again, he's not the same type of dominant player that requires, double and triple teams the same way that Aaron Donald does. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, I'm curious to see how, you know, defensive coordinator Brandon Staley, the job that he's done with the Rams defense this year, I'm curious to see what he does in terms of matching up his players against this Packers offense. Because realistically, you know, Davante Adams has played out of this world this year, has had a record year in terms of Green Bay Packers, you know, franchise marks. But I think if you put Jalen Ramsey on him, I think it could make life difficult for him. He's had a really good season in terms of, you know, matching up one-on-one with other teams' number one receivers when they put him out there. Usually they tend to, you know, deploy him in a nickel, which is called the star in their system role, where he kind of floats around, is able to impact the line of scrimmage. But against the Packers and Aaron Rodgers, I think that they'll want Ramsey to be disruptive in the passing game and really, you know, make life difficult for Davante Adams. Force these guys like Alan Lazard, Marcus Valdes-Scantling, and Robert Tonyan to make plays, and then as well as Aaron Jones. I mean, as long as you could take Davante Adams out of that game, I mean, it can make things really, really interesting for that Packers offense.
And it's supposed to be miserable with the weather. This time of year, teams got to fight through it. Packers have been there. Rams have not. Good stuff on that front. Before I get you out of here, we're talking with Kalen Jones. Make sure you check all of his content out over at The Ringer. It's the coaching carousel. I'm curious your view. It sounds like Urban Meyer's moving in with Jacksonville. This stuff can blow up at the last minute. You have jobs that are open and available out there right now. From your view, which is the best of the jobs available right now as we talk? And why?
Oh, that's a good question. Because, you mentioned Urban Meyer taking over the Jacksonville job. I would assume it's the best one. Because one, you have so much cap space to work with. Two, you get to handpick your quarterback, assuming you get the number one pick in the draft. And then number three, there's less pressure. You know, and the funny thing is, when we first heard Urban Meyer's name begin floating around, the thing that, you know, for me, Brad, you know, I'm 24 years old. So, like, there hasn't been too many times in my life where the Jacksonville Jaguars have been like the laughing stock of the league. They literally just went 1-15 and no one batted an eye. Yep. But, you know, if the New York Jets, they could, you know, have a 7-9 season and still be a laughing stock. There's still that type of pressure, you know, to perform. So I'm not surprised at all that Urban Meyer is going to end up, reportedly with Jacksonville, because, you know, for a guy who, again, is coming from the college ranks, you know, I think especially for him personally, as far as like his previous health concerns, I think it's good that, you know, he goes somewhere kind of laid back where, you know, there's not too much pressure to compete. I'm curious, though, to see, like, whether or not, you know, him arriving in Jacksonville, you know, whether that impacts, you know, Justin Fields or Trevor Lawrence going number one overall. And I'm curious to see how that works, because Fields is going to be familiar with the system. But I think that's the best match, you know, for him. And I think it would have been the best opening in general for any of those head coaching vacancies.
I mean, as it looks like Philadelphia is in salary cap jail. It sounds like the Chargers. It sounds like the Chargers, from being the Chargers that I've known through the years, the ownership there is questionable, and I'm being kind. So, you know, you just look at the position, the possibilities, and then, of course, the Texans that situation, where they're going to go on all fronts. It just feels like you're right that Jacksonville, surprisingly, but they have space, cap space. Yep. They have the number one overall pick. If you don't screw it up and he surrounds himself with a good staff, the demands in Jacksonville are not as great as, say, Philadelphia. So good points right there. I'll let you go off that. Good stuff as always. Appreciate it. Stay safe.
Thanks for having me.
There's Kalen Jones. You can find all of his content on The Ringer. He does a terrific job around the National Football League and other content, as does The Ringer and Bill Simmons. Great work that they do there. And we're back with more after this timeout. Right, time to turn our attention to the business side of sports. And as we do from time to time, we like to bring in Eric Metz, NFL agent, 35-plus years around the National Football League. Eric knows all, and what I like about Eric is he tells all. He joins us to give us a deep dive into a lot of things around the NFL. So let's just start on some local stuff. You have a lot of ties to the Cleveland Browns, but you're also at heart a Pittsburgh Steeler guy. They hammered your team here, the Browns did, but I know you've got some people that you want to acknowledge for causing you pain and agony first and foremost this last weekend.
I couldn't be more impressed with how Cleveland has turned everything around. After 25 awful years, they finally made a tremendous hire by not going after the sexy hire. They went after a winning hire in Kevin Stefanski. And Kevin and Alex Van Pelt, the offensive coordinator, they brought a lot of steady leadership to that locker room and to the field. And all the guys in the locker room say that's been the biggest difference there. Just the calm demeanor, the way that they call plays on Sunday. They're both an extension of one another. They, you know, we all love Freddie Kitchens, but Freddie tried to turn the quarterback into a pocket passer, which he's not. Fortunately, they got a great offensive line, which even though their Hall of Famer, Joe Thomas, retired, Scott Peters and Bill Callahan did a wonderful job of changing everything on the O-line and turning him into that power running game where you can give the guys 35, 45 carries between those two great backs. And then don't ask Baker to win the game. You know, you give him his 25 throws. Don't put all the pressure on him and those receivers. And it's turned into a winning formula because they have some great defensive players as well.
Eric, you've been around the NFL a long time. What's it mean for the league to have a franchise as beaten down but as loyal as Cleveland to still be playing football games in mid-January?
I think it sends a message. It puts a lot of pressure on every other coach and general manager because it says, look, they did it. Why can't we do it? So if you're trying to make a hire in Houston right now, or you're trying to make a hire with the Jets or the Chargers or any place that you're changing things, the Jaguars, you see that it can be done if you make the right hire and not the sexy hire. The problem with the people upstairs is they're interviewing coaches, which, you know, they listen to the media and some other things. Those guys might be, they might win the press conference in January, but the most important thing is winning games in December.
So in the case of Cleveland, when they made the move in their front office, and there's been so many moves, and there was a lot of criticism directed at the organization saying, same old Browns, they went out of the box in their hiring process in front office. It's paid off.
I'll tell you a big thing to do it. And Alex Van Pelt told me before he drove from Cincinnati over to Cleveland. He goes, I have no connection to this guy. Yeah. I don't know why Kevin Stefanski would ever hire me. He said, but when I went in there, we sat down for 5-6 hours and we just talked football and philosophy. And he said, by the end of the interview, he's like, you're the guy. He goes, we have no connection. He's not hiring his buddies. He's hiring people that know football to win games. And I don't see how you can ask for anything more. You got to go outside the box and make the less than sexy hire, make winning hires.
When you're in a space like Philadelphia is in and Jeffrey Lurie, and you decide to pull the plug on Doug Peterson, and you start to hear that perhaps orders were coming down from upstairs in order to play Jalen Hurts, not play Jalen Hurts, not play Carson Wentz, play Carson Wentz back and forth. There's no way a coach can win in that environment. That's what I've heard out of Philly. I don't know if you have a read early on what took place there and walk the viewer through the, yeah, front offices will tell you who to play and how you go about that.
That's all BS. I've been in this business for 36 years, and I'll tell you what, everybody has media connections and they can get out anything that they want. Doug Peterson just wanted out of there. He wanted to go someplace where he had more control. Okay. He wanted to have a little bit of more say so in it. And things fell apart. And then the quarterback who did a great job, Hurts, for two games, they try to put this guy in the Hall of Fame after a couple of games. Carson Wentz is Carson Wentz. He's a tremendous player and a tremendous talent, and he's going to have an outstanding career. But once you start losing, especially in Philly or New York or one of those tough media markets, all the pressure starts coming down. So the Philadelphia Eagles will continue to be successful with Carson Wentz at quarterback.
Will Peterson surface as a coach somewhere else? Lurie suggested that. His name's attached to the Jets. What's your view?
I'm not aware of how close he and Joe Douglas are. You know, everybody knows everybody in an organization, but, you know, anytime you have a Super Bowl ring, you know, unless you're Brian Billick, you always get another good job.
Eric Metz with us for a few minutes. Name, image, likeness. I want to go down this path with you. Somebody that's been in the business as an agent for north of 35 years. Name, image, likeness is now coming on the radars. And if you're a high school parent, if you're a college kid, you've got to be aware of this stuff now, not even to the point where you get to the NFL. I'm just curious, what do you make out of all of this conversation and now moving forward? We saw an NAI volleyball kid sign for $20,000 just last week. Where's this going? What should parents, coaches, players be aware of?
They should be aware of the tax codes in their respective states, because the old money that's always come from college football is all tax-free from boosters, and you get cash. Now, if you're making $20,000, $50,000, $100,000, you used to get cash for $100,000. Okay? Now you're going to have to start paying taxes on that money. So all of a sudden, $100,000 turns into $65,000. And it's not going to be as lucrative as everybody thinks. Sure, if you're Trevor Lawrence or, you know, Baker Mayfield or our guy here, Murray, you're going to get a ton of money. But offensive linemen, I mean, offensive linemen make more than $25,000 to sign with a college nowadays. So why do I want to pay taxes on that? If it's my kid, plus I get a job out of it too. If you're the parent, you also get a job, you know, which obviously that's taxed. But if you're having trouble getting a job, you can go to certain schools and the schools set you up with the parents with a job, as well as, you know, giving tax-free money to the player.
I've read where some recruits with USC said, the reason I signed with the Trojans was NIL, name, image, likeness. They did a great job of convincing me to come here to monetize that. And they've already put their billboards up and they haven't even put on a game jersey as of yet. What do you make out of that, Eric?
I'll tell you, one of the reasons they've had a hard time is because Coach Helton won't cheat. Coach Helton won't pay players to get them the way the Pete Carroll and all the other guys did. So now that they have this opportunity, there's so many opportunities in the Los Angeles area. You're right there in Hollywood. You have so many big time boosters that can do insurance commercials, car commercials, everything else. So it gives you an opportunity to give your top 10, top 22 players, you know, substantial income while they're going to school on top of their scholarship and everything else without having to cheat, which Coach Helton won't do.
If you're Herm Edwards, is this a benefit to you or is this a detriment? USC has that advantage over you.
I don't think so, because the coaches they have at Arizona State, you have all NFL players, all NFL coaches. I don't think anybody in the country is equipped as well as Arizona State to prepare a player for the NFL. Obviously, only a handful go each year to the league. But you know what? If I want to have an opportunity for my son or, you know, to have the best career, I want him around people like that, because not only does Herm and Antonio, and I hope Marvin stays and Sean Slocum stays, he's got a lot of NFL offers. But if those guys stay and Antonio Pierce sticks around, that's who I want raising my kid. Okay. Cause we don't all play in the NFL. You know, everybody doesn't go to the NFL, but they raise good young men. They turn them into grown men from the time they're 18 to 22, 23 at that school. And they couldn't be better coached.
With what's going on with COVID right now, how would you advise a client in the upcoming NFL draft in terms of the combine and their offseason preparation?
I think we're having a Zoom meeting Thursday with the league and the union as far as how they're going to handle the combine. I really don't know how they're going to get around us, because you've been to the combine before. You know what it's like. There's a zillion of us in town, and it's, you know, it's going to be a problem. So I'm not sure when you do it. Maybe push it into March or April or something. I have no idea. I barely got through Penn State. I don't know anything about Madison.
but would you, if an overview on this, would you take a client and say, look, there's plenty of places in Phoenix to go train, and I could list all of them, and I'd leave one out, and they'd be mad at me for not including them. But
exactly.
There's plenty of places out here where you could take a client and say, you know what, let's do this virtually. We'll get you running your 40. We'll show everything as real. We'll get you measured in your underwear. It's no different than going to Indianapolis or not.
No, I don't agree with any of that stuff. And I think that's the easiest part of the evaluation. The hardest part is the psychological evaluations, finding out who's competitive, who's not, who loves football, who's just playing for a paycheck. And then I want to get to know the guy. I want to spend 6 hours with the player, mm-hmm. watching tape, seeing how well he was coached at Alabama or Arizona State or Ohio State or something. How much did they really teach him? Because as a coach, you know, there's a certain learning curve. And I don't have time if I'm trying to win now, like the Cleveland Browns are. I need to win immediately with this kid as a rookie. So that's the biggest part. Obviously, they're talented players, and the medical is the only thing that's the key. So I think we could all have all the medical people, you know, have you know, Tom Reed or Pam Lund or some of those people here with the Cardinals, make sure we get complete medicals on these guys. Okay. Medicals from the obviously the training staff and interviews from the coaches. I don't think the other stuff is really all that necessary. It's just overkill.
And in terms of the, hey, come to the board and let's walk you through this. They always talk about the board and how important that is. Is that still the biggest metric?
I don't know. Cause I sat in my office in 2007 and watched Ken Wisenhunt and Jamarcus Russell for like an hour going through it. And I'm like, this is like medical school. This is so complicated. And Jamarcus made every read and we couldn't figure it out at the end. But the one thing I learned from Jamarcus, who's a wonderful person, is that you can't coach one, two. You can know all that stuff on the board. I can know all that stuff if I spend enough time in it, but I just can't play, you know, but I can coach a seventh grader to one, two, you know, and that's the hardest thing is to figure out which one of these guys has that love and passion for football that you need to have to succeed in that league, because it's such a difficult job.
I want to go down a path with you. We're talking with Eric Metz. He's been in the agent business for coming up on 40 years. I keep dating you with each time I reintroduce you on this segment. But it's the
don't,
way it is.
Don't worry. My gray balding hair takes care of that enough. It's not right hard to figure.
I'm right there with you. But I do want to go down the path because I have people ask me this all the time when it comes to the business side of sports. How does an agent go about curating a client? How early does it start? And I've said, you know, I've seen runners for agents in high school football games. When they know, and they try to get the parents to know at a very early age. How do you go about finding a client? How do you secure a client? Especially as when you've been in it for as long as you've been, things like social media weren't around to begin with. Now it's commonplace. If an agent makes fun of Twitter or social media, they're done, in my opinion. Those guys usually get thrown to the curb. They have to be able to adjust the times or go by the way of the dinosaur. So how do you go about getting on board with someone to trust you with something as important as an agent?
No, I haven't recruited for 6 years. You know, it got too dirty and there's too many payoffs. And, you know,
what do you
the
mean
majority
by dirty, Eric? What do you mean by dirty and payoffs?
I don't mean dirty. I have no problem with anybody getting paid or anything like that. But the agents seem to get to these kids really early. And it started about 25 years ago, when the money started getting bigger, and they get to them early and they're paying them a couple grand a month while they're in college and things like that. So
not, you know, high school.
That's when never in high school. Cause football's a little harder to figure out. Okay. When they're 14, you can figure out which basketball players can play. Okay. You can't do that in the NFL. Guys go from walk-on to Heisman Trophy in college football. So it's a much different sport, but once they establish themselves, there's such a big line of coaches. A lot of agents run the money through the coaches to pay the players. The coaches get kickbacks and everything else. The agents are all paying the kids. It gets pretty dirty. But normally everybody just reaches out to them. And the nice kids like Trevor Lawrence, who hired Sean Howard, who's a great guy, and some of his people down there in South Carolina, Darius Rucker, they're just looking for the best people that are looking out for their best interests. I was fortunate enough to work with Bruce Perkins back in the day. So his son Bryce came out, and Dan Minucci had coached him and put him through all his lab work since he was a kid. And they were just looking for somebody to be honest with him and you know, not charge him an arm and a leg. I'm not a big 3% guy. Not charge him an arm and a leg to tell him what he already knows.
So when you see somebody or identify somebody in this day, like you said earlier, you don't recruit, but you have people that come to you and say, what do you think? What do you think about my son? What's his status? What is the next step from there to find out?
Well, you know, obviously after, you know, 3 or 4 decades in this business, you start trusting your own eyes, but you ask your friends around the league, you know, but all my friends around the league missed on Jamarcus Russell. They, you know, they missed on a number of other guys. Hell, Tom Brady, for crying out loud.
Sure.
The easy explanation, but you go out, you assemble the opinions, but you got to spend time with the player and find out how important it is to him. Okay, is he doing this just to meet girls? Is he doing this to have more money? Is he doing this to have the nice car he always wanted when he was a kid? Or does he not care and just loves football? The passion for football is the most important part, obviously second to talent, but the passion to play that game, because it is so hard what these guys put themselves through mentally and physically to succeed in that league.
Have you ever walked away from someone saying, why did I do this?
I didn't walk away because I wanted to get paid, but I love Joey Galloway. I think he's the most, perhaps the most talented player I was ever around, but not sure if Joey had that passion to play. He was the hardest worker I ever met off the field, but we had an issue one time 20 years ago. I'm proud that I made him the highest paid wide receiver in football and got him traded for 2 first-round picks to the Dallas Cowboys in February of 2000 and made him the highest paid player by 30%. But Stephen Jones and Jerry asked me afterwards, they go, well, after the deal was done, they go, what do you think we just did? And I go, I think this might've been the Herschel Walker trade in reverse. I go, I'm not sure. He's a great player, but I'm just not sure how passionate he is. But he's a wonderful guy, obviously a great on the media side of it. He and Kirk Herbstreit, who was a buddy of his that played golf out here with us that I didn't even know, and they're two of the nicest guys I ever met. But I think Joey Galloway was a Hall of Fame talent and a Hall of Fame player that I didn't walk away from him. He fired me at the end. But it's the way it goes sometimes.
Eric Metz with us. Is there a player that you look back on that you've represented saying, if he just could have given me a little bit more, he would have gone, given himself maybe a little bit more is the better question, he could have gone places he never thought of?
Well, obviously the easy one is Jamarcus Russell, because I'm the same age as Marino and Elway and those guys. And all the people I put around him, they're like, he's the most talented player I've ever seen in my life. And you know what? It wasn't – Dan Marino's talent was here to here. He was in that right arm and in his head. Mm. Tough Pittsburgh mentality. Toughest quarterback you're ever going to meet. John Elway's John Elway, obviously. He's great too. But that's probably the single most frustrating – situation of my career, because he just had unsurpassed talent.
I want to turn attention on the business side and I'll let you go, and I appreciate all your time talking with Eric Metz. That is, the NFL this last weekend went down the path with Nickelodeon, and it was well received. 2 million people tuned in to watch a football game on a cartoon channel, and there was fun about it, and the young generation dove in. The NFL's tried forever to get people beyond the hardcore football guy. They've tried to go after women, and I think they've succeeded there. Their women numbers are up. Now they're going to the cartoon side. Where does this end, Eric? When does football really not matter as much as just the entertainment side?
It'll go pay-per-view because of gambling. Now that they've entered into the gambling business, now you can get people to pay-per-view for a meaningless Week 17 game, because there's so many billions of dollars every week being gambled on these games. Gambling is what's made the league work for the past 60 years. Mm-hmm. You know, so I think you just keep tapping those markets, getting people – and it's a great lead in. Look what everybody thought Fox was crazy when they jumped in and overpaid for the television contract. What was that, 30 years ago? And people thought they were nuts when they stole it away from NBC. But it's a great lead in to your other programs. Gambling guarantees that you're going to have eyes, you know, on the television, on the pay-per-view, whatever it is. But if anybody's going to pay, you know, if anybody's going to pay to see an MMA fight for $35, you don't think they're going to pay. You don't think they're going to pay to watch the Chiefs, you know, play in a conference championship game. This will explode. It'll go. I would suspect it would go at least from $17 billion business to a $35 billion business within the next 5 years.
Yeah, and to your point, if CBS does not have the NFL's Elite in 60 Minutes is nowhere near where it is today. That show in itself has been top 10 every week with the NFL's its lead in the fall. So
I still miss Pat Summerall and John Madden introducing 60 Minutes and Murder, She Wrote before right. before every game. That's what made every Sunday night.
Before I get you out of here, the playoffs as they go, just one last thought here. Where do you see this year's playoff going? Just from the fans' point of view, you've got the agent hat on. But where do you see this playoff going? Is it Kansas City, Green Bay? What do you think?
Yeah, that's exactly who I think it is. I mean, Kansas City and Green Bay, hands down. Both very well-coached teams, great head coaches. Injuries might hurt. The Bakhtiari thing hurts. I got to research it again today because I saw the one guy went to be left tackle.
Jared Valdir.
Yeah, Valdir, who we had here. Yeah. Obviously a very good player. But he went to the Colts – or came into the Colts to do that – or to the Packers to do that. And I'm like, if they can hold down that left tackle, you know, I said, I absolutely think it's Green Bay and Kansas City.
Well, Jared Valdir a week ago.
Don't discount the Bills, though.
Well, Jared Valdir was wearing a Colts uniform last Saturday. This week he's wearing a Packers jersey. It's in the postseason, but he wasn't on the practice. He was on the practice squad.
Practice squad. That's why you can do it.
And so fans have asked, well, what is this loophole all about? And that's one that's really interesting this point of the season.
It's called the it's the COVID season. Okay. But, just like the strike in 87. Nobody discounts Washington. Nobody remembers how Washington Redskins got a ring in that year with a shortened season. But the thing is, Russ Grimm and Joe Theismann and those guys, they still have rings, and nobody asks them whether there was a strike in 1987.
Eric, I appreciate the time, the insight. Good stuff there. Always good to catch up with you on the business side of the NFL. Stay well, stay safe.
Thanks, buddy.
There's Eric Metz with us, and we are back with more after this timeout.